This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and it's great to have you with us on our radio Main Street across North Dakota on a beautiful spring day, which brings to mind, you know, getting outside, maybe doing some gardening. Looking forward to mowing the lawn. Well, it's time to talk with a horticulturist, and retired NDSU horticulturist Ron Smith is a regular on Main Street during the growing season, and he joins Ashley Thornburg and me in studio to take your calls and emails.
Ron, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, especially with this kind of weather.
And the number to call to get your questions in is 888-755-6377. You can also email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or find us on Facebook, Main Street at Prairie Public. The number one more time, 888-755-6377. And Ron, I'm noticing that the ground is pretty dry right now. We had some flooding issues in parts of the state, but not a whole lot of rain.
No, not at least not in the eastern part of the state. It's very dry. It's almost a drought condition, I would call it. If you've been working out in your yard, I don't have to tell you that. You realize it. It's very, very dry. So I would encourage people, if they're going to have any kind of renovated work done to their lawn, which would be core aeration and power raking, to saturate their lawn or give their lawn a good sprinkling 24 hours before the operator comes out to do the core aerating and the power raking of your lawn to do a little bit of renovating.
So, got to soften it up a bit, huh?
Yes, it does. Otherwise, it just bounces across, makes little dents in the top, almost like hail hitting the soil, you know, bump, 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 and that's about it.
Is that only the saturation? Is that only necessary if you're going to do the core aeration and power raking? Or like if you just see a weed or a patch of grass that you don't want in your garden, can you just go ahead and pluck that?
Well, it's better if you soften the soil. The weeds come out a lot easier if you soften the soil with water. You can go ahead and try to pull them out when they're dry, but they have a lot of resistance there. And what you do is you just break it off at the crown most often. Or in some cases, the root of the weed has the ability to go ahead and send out a new bud, a new crown, and go ahead and grow in spite of your best efforts.
So. There's nothing more satisfying than pulling the entire weed out and seeing all the roots there. The number is 888-755-6377. That's toll-free. We're taking your calls live on the air. Ron, we just went through an epic winter. We have them occasionally. Yes. And this is the planting season. So let's talk about what kinds of plants could we put in the ground around our homes that will survive a winter like we just had.
Yes, that's very, very important because there's nothing more discouraging than investing a lot of money, and you do invest a lot of money in your plants, whether they're annual or perennial plants or herbaceous or woody plants. So there's a big expenditure at this time of the year. And if you're into annuals, then it doesn't really make any difference. People like annuals because they flower all summer long. You put them in the ground, and they're hybrids. They're very vigorous, and they grow and flower and grow and flower and grow and flower, and then the frost hits them in the fall, and then you're done with them. So as you get older, like I have gotten, and we
and
all
me.
Have, you look at annuals and say,
most
yes.
Most people are getting older.
Well, it's all relative, actually.
It's relative, yes. you look at annuals and say, that's very nice for these young people to go ahead and put in and have your children put them in and everything else. For me and my wife, we like to look at perennials, and we've found several out there that do very well for us, and we have a history of them. And one of the best ones that I know of, and I've recommended it to Bill before, was ajuga or bugleweed. It makes a nice low ground cover. Leaves are prostrate to the ground. Once it gets established, it's a good weed controller. Some people consider it a weed themselves. If you went further south or east in the country here, why are you growing that stuff? It grows all over. It'll invade the lawn. It smothers other plants. Well, we want that kind of vigor here, okay? Mm-hmm. And my ajuga are coming back, and I'm pretty sure probably Bill's are coming back as well if he planted any last year. Another good one is a sweet a black-eyed Susan called Irish Eyes, which is very beautiful. It's a new cultivar. And typically, black-eyed Susans are semi-hardy here, but they have a new cultivar now that it is cold of minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, which we had this last year, this past winter. So that's a good one. Another good one that I found that does very well in shade, and this is something that we're going to be looking at more and more as time goes on. Shade-loving plants, one called lungwort, L-U-N-G-W-O-R-T. That survives down to minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's,
hopefully that's a safe number.
Yes. Yeah. And if it's that cold, I think we're going to worry more about our survival than anything else. And the cultivar is called Mrs. Moon, is a cultivar of the lungwort. another good one is sweet woodruff. I've had that in my yard for several years. In fact, I dug it out of one location and put it in another location. And it's thriving, makes a very good, beautiful ground cover with little white flowers, very fragrant when it's in flower. And again, it's another one that's a good fighter of weeds in your gardens out there. another excellent one, and I know I'm going through these rather fast, is one called coral bells, which I've had in our garden for several years, and we planted some more this year, taking up more space. And this is heuchera. People know that by their botanical name, heuchera or coral bells. Very nice purple leaf, a little spike-type flower. Gets to be about a foot and a half high. They look great. They don't wander around. They don't invade. And they keep coming back very nicely. Another one that goes along with that, and then I'll shut up here and let you ask me some questions, is one called Lady's Mantle. Little mound. Looks like a cereal bowl turned upside down. And it has a little nondescript flower, not a significant flower, but the foliage is a nice little compact foliage about this up the size of an upside-down cereal bowl. And it survives year in, year out, year in and year out in our particular garden. So I'd look for some of those in the landscape. if you are tired of having to do any replanting and you want to give yourself a good blanket of ground cover, there's a lamium called orchid frost, that does a very good job of covering the soil and choking out weeds. My daughter has it down in Faribault. We have it up here in North Dakota. It creeps along, covers the soil, makes a good underground, not an underground, but an understory planting around trees and shrubs. And it helps to control the weed problem that you don't want to have get established.
Of these perennials, I have a northeast exposure, which gets a lot of shade, you know. So which is the best option for that, for a well-shaded place, doesn't get a lot of sunlight?
Yeah, well, like the one I mentioned there, lungwort would be your number one primary character to go after, L-U-N-G-W-O-R-T. And it's the Mrs. Moon. It's hardy, like I said, down to minus 40 degrees. That does a lot, does tolerate. It just says shade. You know, it's just shade. It doesn't need any direct sunlight. But if it does get direct sunlight, it'll be all right.
Would it look good with hostas?
With what?
With hostas?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It would be a very good associate with hostas.
Well, there I go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Well, to plan your lawn and garden, give us a call, 888-755-6377. You can also email mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or find us on Facebook, Main Street at Prairie Public. We do have one question from Facebook that says, in my yard, I have several places that I have moss growing in the grass. Mm-hmm. Last year, I tried raking up the moss and planting grass, hoping it was just an abundance of moisture on the north side of the fence and the house. Mm-hmm. But this year, the moss is back again. How do you suggest getting rid of moss and preventing it from returning?
Well, I'm not going to recommend liming, which is what's something everybody does, but not here in North Dakota. We don't want to recommend liming because our soil is alkaline enough. What the problem is that the surface of the soil is very hard, and you don't get good drainage, and so that moisture stays on the surface, and the result is you get this moss growing in the shady side of the tree, the shady side of the house, the north side of the house. The best thing they can do would be to get in there either with a rake, garden rake, and hit it hard to break up that surface, or have the lawn core aerated to break that up to improve the drainage. And once the water starts to move through that soil profile, she'll have a great reduction in moss. But moss is going to be kind of a comeback type of thing as the compaction goes on year after year. She's going to get some moss showing up.
Yeah.
And but if she schedules herself to go ahead and have the lawn core aerated or power raked about every 3 years. She should have a minimum of invasion of mosses.
The phones have been ringing, and we've got a cell phone caller, Mark in Minot. Mark, what's your question?
Hi, Mark. Hello, Mark.
Got the wrong phone up next there.
Mark, are you still with us?
I guess Mark left us, but we have Merrill Dakota Date Book Pepcorn on the phone, and he joins us from Fargo. Hey, Merrill.
Hi, Merrill.
Hey, I don't know. It seems I must be doing a lot of driving lately because whenever you're on, I find myself just driving around.
Okay.
So, I've already determined I'm going to kill off the grass in my front yard because there is a variety of invasive species that came in a couple of years ago during a dry spell or something. So I'm going to hang up and listen to your preferred method of, you know, how to kill off the grass, when to kill it off. It's the west side of my house, so it's plenty of sunshine. You know what kind of grass to plant, and just kind of walk me through that procedure in as simple terms as possible.
Okay. Well, listen carefully, but drive carefully also.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, I'm hanging up. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. The best approach is to get the lawn when it's in its most vulnerable stage, and that's coming out of dormancy right now, or the weeds coming out of dormancy and starting to go ahead and sprout and grow. Get it with Roundup, and I would suggest getting a professional to come in and kill it off with Roundup. They know what they're doing. They know how to handle the material. They aren't going to overspray anything. Let it all die down, then water it or let the rain try to resprout it again, and anything that resprouts, go back in there and kill it all off again. You can do that yourself. The second application, yourself with spot sprays of Roundup. Then go in, core aerate, power rake, and overseed with a Kentucky bluegrass blend of Kentucky bluegrass cultivars. Be patient. It'll germinate. Once bluegrass gets established, it makes a very good, aggressive turf grass surface.
Merrill, I'm going to interject here, too. I did this with my lawn somewhat recently. It was killing off the grass. And another way, especially if you have the luxury of time, is to just put down a layer of cardboard or a layer of plastic and just stake that down or that way you get the chemical-free way to get rid of that grass, and then you can just kind of rake it up at the end. And if you're not sold on replacing with grass, you can always try doing some meadow or some wildflowers. Right. I got to just put that in there.
Oh, I don't blame
meadow
you.
Restoration.
She's got a meadow in North Moorhead, that's why.
I don't blame you at all, Ashley. That's good. The problem is we run into impatience in our as a species. We are very impatient.
Trying.
I'm sick of it. I want to get
patience.
It over with, get it done, get it corrected, and be done with it. So, yes, if you have the patience, go ahead and put cardboard down. Put newspapers down, put plastic down, anything to go ahead and smother the weeds that are growing there and then proceed from there.
The number is 888-755-6377. That's 888-755-6377 to talk to horticulturist Ron Smith. Mark in Minot is back with us.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. Sorry about that phone dropped out in transit. I got three questions for you. So we'll take them in order of importance for me. I think I'm the only guy in North Dakota who can't grow rhubarb.
You've got to be kidding. Okay.
No, 3 years running, and I can't get a whole lot out of it. I moved it to a sunnier spot. I've been told to just ignore it. I've actually been watering it. I don't know if that's good or bad. So that's my first question is silly. How does a guy grow rhubarb?
Well, it's probably like zucchini. Just ignore it.
I don't know what to tell you. Stick it in the ground in a sunny spot. That's the most important thing. Don't plant it too deeply and just stand back. Ours has grown. I mean, we have done nothing to ours for years and years and years, and we're giving away stalks of rhubarb all the time. My wife
and
makes –
by nothing –
Pardon me?
Yeah, by nothing do you mean no manure, no Miracle-Gro, no water, no
– Nothing. Let Mother Nature take its course. It seems to love our North Dakota environment the way it gets delivered. And so I would say once you plant it, water it in that first few weeks after you give it a good soaking, then just stand back and just let it go. It's going to do its own thing. I can almost guarantee you that you'll probably be giving some away to your neighbors after about a year.
Okay.
Or your one will be giving some away.
I'll call you back in a year. I hope you're right.
Okay.
I really honestly think I'm the only guy in North Dakota who can't grow it. So.
Okay, you've got to be.
Just get a good book and just sit by the rhubarb.
Just sit back. Okay. The second question is on strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I are very interested. I'm a novice gardener, only a couple years under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
But we're interested in having strawberries, and she specifically wants them in containers. Like bigger pots.
Oh, okay.
Do you recommend that? Do you not? How many should we be putting in a pot? How big should the pot be? How much sun should it get? Give me all the tips on growing strawberries in a pot, please.
Okay. Well, strawberries will grow in a pot very nicely. And when you say a pot, it depends on how big the pot is. You want to get something, I would say, that would be about bushel basket size or
it's
something.
A big pot.
Yeah, a big pot.
Yeah.
That you can go ahead and put 3 to 5 plants into. And don't worry about it. The strawberries will grow and cover the top of the pot and hang down over the side of the pot. It'll produce beautiful strawberries for you. The birds and the squirrels and the rabbits will love them. So once they start to ripen up, get to them right away. The birds especially like to go after the red strawberries. But they will make very delicious fruit for you, and they grow very easily. High organic soil. If you go into any of the garden centers or big box stores up there in Minot, look for high organic potting soil or potting soil that's specifically for container or the soil that's specifically for container gardening. It will produce beautiful strawberries for you.
And your last question.
And then should I be plucking those sprouts or these, whatever, the spinners or the extra strawberries that are going to grow? Is there a variety that grows the best in pots up here or not necessarily?
Well, I can't give you the that kind of a judgment. The ones I have grown, the best one I've grown, I like the best, has been one called Goose Cap. I don't know whether it's still on the market or not. Keep in mind, I'm 82 years old, so what I liked back then might say, what? We never heard of that before. So
it's an heirloom strawberry.
It's a beautiful strawberry, and the thing that's nice about it is that the cap separates very easily from from the fruit, so you don't have to cut the cap off. I fix breakfast at our house, and we have fresh strawberries every single morning on our cereal, and I'm ending up by cutting the cap off of the top of the strawberry, and that just takes time, and then you cut it up into little pieces and so on and so forth. But if you get the Goose Cap, it makes a nice plump berry about the size of your thumb and forefinger put together, and they're delicious, very sweet. Take good care of them, and they'll grow beautifully for you. Now, what's your third question?
The third question is on sweet potatoes.
Oh.
My wife loves them. Can we grow them up here? Do I grow them just like I do potatoes? I don't see anyone selling seed sweet potatoes. Am I in the wrong state?
Yes.
Bummer. Okay.
You can try it. We've tried it, and we've grown very small sweet potatoes. There are some people here that are very successful at doing it. I don't know what they do. If you want to get sweet potatoes, go online, Google it, find out what are good, hardy sweet potatoes for growing up in North Dakota. Typically, we don't have a long enough hot temperature to go ahead and get a decent potato to develop. We can grow sweet potato vines, which make beautiful vines, but we don't grow good, edible sweet potatoes. I'm sorry. I love them, too.
That's okay. Is it the same concept as a regular potato? I mean, I guess I could check it out online, but is it the idea you put in a seed and you let it, or the seed potato, and you let it grow for as much as you can and pull out at the very end?
Oh, no. They're two entirely different species. It's like comparing a Ford with a Sherman tank. Yeah, okay. They two have two different purposes, two extremes in their overall being made characteristics and how you use them characteristics. So a sweet potato is definitely a warm season crop. It's a southern crop. Irish potato is a stem crop, actually, that you harvest the potato from under the ground. The sweet potato is a root. And so you're talking about the root of one plant, which is the sweet potato, whereas you're talking about a stem of another plant, which is the Irish potato. And that's why when you see Irish potatoes, they have eyes in them. You can cut those eyes out and plant those, and then you have the same potato that you had before. The Irish potato produces a fruit that looks like a cherry tomato on the top. You can harvest those, sow those seeds in the ground, and you will get some more potatoes. There, you got a horticulture 101 lesson.
All right, we have other people on the line. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mike.
888-755-6377. Let's go to Dennis in Bismarck.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi there, folks. Just wanted to let you know about with moss and I'm trying to think what the other one is. But a six-tine fork really works good. Just perforate everything really well.
A six-tine fork? Okay.
A what? Yep, a pitchfork?
Oh, pitchfork. Yeah, break up the surface here.
Well,
yes.
The pitchfork is too small, but old six-tine fork with a wide blade, that works pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I call them sharpshooters. Everybody has their own language for them. Yeah, sharpshooters. Yeah. Just break up that surface, and that's that would work very, very, very well.
That seems to upset the apple cart for them, and then they disappear.
Oh, nice.
Good.
And Ashley, I want to give you a compliment. I love you.
I'm listening.
Yeah. Radio.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. That's very sweet.
Well, she's easy to love, and she's blushing right now.
I'm sure.
She has a beautiful blush. She's got the most beautiful blush I've ever seen on a woman.
Oh,
and she's not even
on
television.
We're on radio for a reason.
I'm good at that once in a while.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
And let's get the, the reaction of Zach, her husband, who's on the phone from Morehead. Hello, Zach.
Hello. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Zach. How are you? Did you hear your wife's compliment?
I did, and I agree.
Yeah, you better.
I'm going to keep a recording of this, Zach, just so you know.
Anything we can do for you, Zach?
Well, we've got some concerns about moving a fence that has a nice establishment of Engelmann ivy on it.
Oh, okay.
Chain link fence, and we'd like to pull it all up at once, and it's no easy feat, and transplant it about 10 feet from where it's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that ivy is really hardy, so I assume it would be okay, but it's now it's old enough to where I'm afraid it might shock it, and it may not grow again. So
well,
I was just wondering if that would be a good way to go.
Well, it would be, and you will shock it, but it will continue to grow. I've known people that want to try to kill ivy, and they've done everything but, seal it in solid concrete, and it comes back unless you do something really drastically wrong. But normal handling of the plant, just, get your fence out, move it over 10 feet wherever you want to move it, and try to move the ivy at the same time. The only thing I would suggest now, is it leafing out now?
Yeah.
It's just starting, yeah.
Yeah. The sooner you can get to that, the better you're going to be. I would suggest if you can't get to it now, wait until it's dormant this fall, let it defoliate, then go ahead and move it. And I'll guarantee you, unless we have World War III, it'll go ahead and grow for you.
Well, it looks like we have another project then, actually.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Zach.
Thing ever, Zach.
Thank you. The horticulturist is in. The toll-free number is 888-755-6377, or you can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. And we'll be back with horticulturist Ron Smith after the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A committee of the State Board of Higher Education has endorsed a plan by Williston State College to charge in-state tuition rates for students from surrounding states and Canadian provinces. WSC has done this in the past. College President Dr. John Miller told the board's Budget and Finance Committee he's concerned about being competitive.
We believe if we keep our factors, hence our tuition, at a cost-effective place, it's going to spur growth, which is where we've been for the last 5 years or so, and that in turn will end up leading to additional tuition revenue in the long run.
Committee Chair Nick Hacker supported the idea, but sounded a cautionary note about the downside to headcount growth.
But if it has a negative impact on your financial picture, it's probably not very good growth.
But Miller told the committee he's more interested in full-time students and the credit hours they take.
It really comes down to how many credits you're generating.
The full board will look at the plan later this month. China is hardly buying any U.S. soybeans thanks to the ongoing trade dispute. But as China grapples with a major disease outbreak, there's a possible silver lining for farmers here. Here's Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer.
African swine fever has led to the deaths of at least a million hogs in China, a country that eats a lot of pork. To meet that demand, China may need to import more U.S. pork. The U.S. has the capacity to raise more pigs, and those animals would eat some of the soybeans that China isn't currently buying. But Mike Steenhoek of the Soy Transportation Coalition cautions that it's barely a bright spot.
There certainly is potentially an opportunity to recoup some of that lost demand, but it's going to be very difficult to fully absorb that just by selling more pork.
And with U.S.-imposed tariffs on pork, too, the Chinese may turn to other suppliers. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
And a North Dakota legislator has been named co-chair of a national committee that meets to discuss issues in state governments. Grand Forks Representative Corey Mock, a Democrat, was named co-chair of the Council of State Governments Interbranch Affairs Committee for 2019 and 2020. He will serve with Republican Michael Moore, Deputy Chief of Staff for Utah Governor Gary Herbert. The committee meets at least once per year and works on developing positions on policy and solutions that encourage cooperation between branches of government and state agencies. Mock says this is the first time he's been involved in the Council of State Governments, and he's currently the only North Dakotan on the committee.
Yeah, it's definitely not every day. You know, we've had some past members. I know Representative Kim Koppelman is a former national chairman of CSG. It's few and far between of the number of the times when North Dakota legislators or elected officials serve at the national level on boards like this. So it is it's an honor and a privilege. It's great to get North Dakota on the map and represent our state on a very important committee and within an incredible organization.
As co-chair, Mock will also be serving on the CSG's Leadership Council, which meets this weekend in Louisville, Kentucky. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg and horticulturist Ron Smith. We are taking your lawn and garden questions because it is spring out. And that number, toll-free, is 888-755-6377 or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org.
And we have on the line Judy in Hazen.
Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a relative who recently moved to an apartment that has a, instead of having a deck, has an enclosed sunroom built where the deck mm-hmm. is. So it's screened in. Mm-hmm. Can he grow tomatoes in there?
Yes. Assuming that the name fits the environmental situation that does get sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The only thing they're going to have to do, it's not going to be a place where they'd want to keep a little hive of bees to go ahead and do the pollinating for them.
Yeah.
What I would suggest doing would be to get a little hand vibrator, an electric toothbrush that kind of, you know, vibrates back and forth.
To pollinate and do all that stuff?
To pollinate the tomato plants.
Ah, yeah.
And that way they'll go ahead and develop good tomatoes for you. That would be the only limiting factor. If you don't have some kind of movement, or you can put a fan in there that have a fan, one of those
oscillating
fans. Thank you. I couldn't get the word out. Oscillating fans. That'll help movement, and it'll get the pollen onto the pistil of the plant, the female part of the flower, I should say, and get them to go ahead and develop for you. So, yes, go ahead and try it.
Okay, so doing it with your finger?
You could do it with your fingers. You could go ahead, if you have enough patience, just snap them, you know, like you want to get, you know, just snap it a little bit or tap it a little bit. As long as you get some movement, it'll be okay. But where they don't get movement, the fruit being set is going to be few and far between and probably undersized.
Okay, so the fact that it has screens in, would a breeze do
it? Yes, screens would help. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for your call. That
was
interesting.
From now on, I am going to think of electric toothbrush as like pollinating my teeth. Somehow.
I have another reason to use my Oral-B.
There's many reasons, yes.
The number is 888-755-6377, or you can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.com.
We have an email question that says, we have an area of lawn that doesn't get a lot of sunlight because of tall trees and a neighbor's new fence. The grass is dying even though we water and fertilize. Is there a shade-tolerant grass you would recommend?
Well, there are shade-tolerant grasses, and one of them would be tall fescue. It will grow in shady situations. It will also grow in full sun. And there's the creeping red fescue, which is typically a shade-tolerant grass. But if it gets absolutely no sun, it's going to be a very, very weak lawn, and it's not going to do very well. So some sun needs to be there, either dappled shade or filtered shade to have it work. But if you have a block there that the sun can't possibly reach it, you're never going to be successful, and you're really better off coming up with a shade meadow growing there. Something that will grow and tolerate that kind of shade. But grass does need to have some sun in order for it to go ahead and be useful as a turf grass.
888-755-6377 or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. This is kind of a sad story, but interesting too. A driver hit one of our old 250-year-old oak trees. Mm. The car struck the tree at about 90 miles per hour. I can only imagine that a crash like that. Mm. And took the bark off the majority of the lower part of the tree. Is the tree salvageable? And we don't know what happened to the person in the car. So,
I don't even want to think about that. If there is some bark left there, and depending on where you are, I would suggest trying to find in your phone book or through the city or the community that you live in, a certified arborist to come out and take a look at that tree and examine it to see if there's enough cambial tissue connecting the root system to the aerial part of the tree to have that tree survive. That's something that's going to be have to be an on-the-spot judgment. My mind's eye sees half of the bark ripped from the tree. Oak is a very, very dense wood, very sturdy wood, and the tree is probably going to survive, but it probably needs a little bit of help along the way. If you can get in there with an arborist that can get in there and clean that wound up and help to facilitate the healing, the bark will eventually grow back over that over many, many, many years.
But I can only imagine the size of a 250-year-old oak tree.
Have the caliper of our table here that we're sitting at,
four feet or so.
Yeah, four feet. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's a substantial.
The car
plant
was a loser in that thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
The number to call 888-755-6377. We've got about 10 minutes left here with Ron Smith live in studio. So go ahead and get your calls in now. You can also email us anytime, mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. We do have an email question from Denver. That says, I have a large green ash tree in my yard. Parts of the tree are dying and do not have any leaves. There is no yellowing, and the entire branch itself is not dead. Concerned because it's early spring and only parts of the branches have buds. This person doesn't see any bugs. The tree gets lots of water. What's going on here?
Okay, a lot of things can be going on. Of course, we don't have to worry about the emerald ash borer out there in that part of the country yet, but there are lilac borers that love ash trees. Yes, they don't distinguish. I'm a lilac borer, so I'm only going to eat into lilacs. If there's an ash nearby, they'll go and attack that as well. So they make little small pencil-sized holes in the bark of the tree, and the tree will weaken, the dead branch here, dead branch there. Again, it's something that an arborist needs to come out and take a look at, and in that area of the country, there should be plenty of arborists around the Denver area that could possibly help them make a decision as to what's going on and what kind of treatment that it needs. Letting it go unchecked or unexamined or not following up with some good care will only encourage whatever is going on in there to continue and be the end of the tree. So
the number 888-755-6377 or email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org. You're talking about the emerald ash borer, and I guess one of the good news pieces of this miserable winter we had
was wondering if you're going to bring that up.
It was tough on emerald ash borers,
yes.
and we haven't really had them show up here yet, have we?
Yes, and there's no point in having a funeral for them because they're going to come back again. That only killed off a certain part of the population. But it's nice. Any part of the population that's killed off is good news for us. But they will work their way back. You can put, if you have significant ash trees on your property or an ash tree that is significant to you, it's a beautiful tree, you can have an arborist come out and put some protective insecticide that's injected into the tree that will control or keep the tree from being destroyed by the emerald ash borer. The biggest problem with emerald ash borer is you don't know that you have it until it's too late.
Uh-huh.
What's killing this tree? You look up, there's a quarter of the tree dead.
Well, that raises the question of, if I'm going to plant a tree, should I be planting an ash tree?
Oh, my gosh, no. There's too many other trees that are very valuable. I mean, that's the nice thing about NDSU and the University of Minnesota. They're doing research on different tree species that you can plant, and there, if you just do a Google search on NDSU new tree introductions, and the same thing with University of Minnesota new tree introductions for landscaping, you'll find a good list of trees that you can use there that are not ash trees, and you're going to find more municipalities planting a mix of species of trees, not going to be a boulevard of ash or a boulevard of maples or a boulevard of oaks. It's going to be ash, oak, linden, whatever. They're going to have a good mix up there so we don't have entire communities being wiped out.
Well, we learned that lesson from Dutch elm.
Dutch
right.
elm disease,
which
yes.
wiped out the boulevards of Fargo in many
yes.
places.
Well, it did all over the country. So,
so mix it up.
Yeah, but you've got to admit, aesthetically, we like beautiful things.
Yes, we do.
Yes,
he
said
as he gestured
so.
Toward
I just gestured toward
lots of
Ashley. And she's blushing a little bit again. Not as bad as she was before, but
we
anyway.
We love beautiful plants.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And
thanks for keeping
us
on topic.
If you look at a boulevard of the same species of trees, they're magnificent. You love them. They're fantastic. But they take a lot of care. And that's going against nature's wishes. And Mother Nature has a tendency or a way of winning her own battles. It might take a little bit longer, but she's eventually going to win.
We really need to stop second guessing and try and getting in the way of Mother
yes,
Nature.
Yes, yes, yes. So.
Yeah, for real.
Here's another question. I hope that you can help me with my ornamental grass question. I've been trying to figure out what the name of the ornamental grass is that I've seen in a couple of spots in West Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
I've asked a couple of nurseries, but nobody seems to know. It's tall. It has white, long, gorgeous plumage. It can be found at the Cheyenne Crossings Assisted Living Facility in West Fargo. It's also growing at the new Titan Machinery Building. If you need a picture, let me know.
No, I've seen it. It's the exact same thing. It's the Miscanthus sinensis. Gracilimensis. It's beautiful. Just Miscanthus sinensis is close enough for.
It doesn't have a non-Latin name like big, tall, beautiful grass.
Miscanthus. Yeah, I mean sometimes the botanical name and the common name are one and the same thing. It is a beautiful plant, and it will be something that catches anybody's eyes. So we don't see them that often, but the ones he's talking about, I have seen those. And they are worth stopping.
How
and
tall do
a
they
photograph
get?
Of.
How tall do they get?
Oh, they get to be about 6 to 8 feet tall.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a grass.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that a big time sun lover? I've got a couple spots I could use a grass like that, but it's not full sun.
Yes.
So, not that one. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Ron, we have an email question here. Someone who would like to know, can I plant clover to take over the weeds instead of grass? It is a crimson variety of clover.
Crimson.
Red clover. I'm going to have to... I'm
I really
have
want
to
the answer to this to
duck,
be yes.
Duck out on that. I'm not too sure I know what she means by red clover. Because there are some species of clover that get to be shoulder height, and if they get established, they're pretty tough. The old-fashioned Dutch clover was considered a drought-proof substitute for grass in the old days, and I'm talking about the old days back in the 40s, your typical grass seed mixture would have Kentucky Blue, perennial rye, fescue, and clover seed. And clover seed is like a little BB. And so the grass would grow. This is before they had irrigation systems in lawns like they do now. The grass would grow. You get into the summer, the grass would die. The clover would be nice and patchy. And as kids, you'd have to watch out you didn't step into the clover because the bees loved the clover and you would get stung. That's the clover I'm familiar with.
Well, I remember the four-leaf clovers.
Yeah, you know. I'm not sure I know what she means by that one, so I have to kind of cop out on that. And I, for that, I where is she?
It's just an email. Yeah. I'm not sure.
I would suggest doing I'm going to sound like a commercial. Go back to the Google it and see what she comes up with as far as red clovers go.
We got a couple of minutes left and one more question, and this one's intriguing. It's the bark on my Schubert chokecherry tree is becoming dark. The bark also is cracking and splitting. By late summer, the leaves begin to turn yellow and start falling off. I've sought advice from local greenhouses. The best guess is that it might be a burrowing insect. Any suggestions on how to solve the problem? Thanks, and I appreciate your assistance.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of Schubert chokecherries because they do have their own book of problems that you can go ahead and buy if you want to find out all the problems that they have. It could be a bacterial or fungal canker. It could be boring insect larvae. I would suggest falling out of love with this thing if you do love it and get it replaced with something else. Go to one of the two sites that I mentioned, NDSU, New Ornamental Tree Introductions, and University of Minnesota Ornamental Tree Introductions. See what they have out there that you can go ahead and plant. They have some very beautiful pest-tolerant or pest-resistant trees that grow nicely, that don't overpower the landscape like some of our species have. They are very, very good. They've been well-researched for 10 years or more at the both of those universities to go ahead and get something on the market that we can use and have some variety in our landscapes on. So I would suggest falling out of love with this particular tree because there are just too many things that go wrong with it.
And a reminder that we do have the Extension Service.
Yes,
the universities
absolutely.
Around
that
here.
Extension Service will help you.
There are greenhouses and professionals out there who are opening their shops, looking forward to talking to you about stuff that works better than other stuff.
Yeah,
and, of course, you can also Google, too, and get some background.
I doubt that you're going to find any more Schubert chokecherries on the market. I'd be surprised if you did because they've just – after a while, it had so many problems. People that I know said, I'm not handling those doggone things anymore because all I got were a bunch of complaints after a couple of years.
All right.
You know, suckers coming out all over the lawn.
So we're looking for the new kind of chokecherry tree. Huh?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we've run out of time with horticulturist Ron Smith, but you can always email questions to Ron.
The email address is mainstreet@prairiepublic.org, or you can find us on Facebook, Main Street at Prairie Public.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Good pleasure to be here and see Ashley blush so nicely.
Harvest Public Media is next.
Hi, this is Bill Thomas. Prairie Public Spring On Air member drive has been happening the last few days. As usual, there are thanks to give, mostly to you who have made a contribution. Without the support of our listeners, we would not be here at all. It's great to hear from so many people from all over our region and beyond. I'll also thank Birnbaum's Deli, the Red River Coffee Company, 20 Below, and Detroit Deli for feeding and caffeinating our volunteers and staff. The donation page is still up at prairiepublic.org, and you can still call 800-359-4145 to join up. Keep up the support. We'll keep up the programming. Thanks so much.
Our thanks, too. Thanks for all of those people who participated. You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. More than 1 billion pounds of pesticides are applied every year on U.S. crops like corn, wheat, and soybeans. That puts many field workers in the vicinity of toxic chemicals. In the second of three stories about pesticide use and safety, Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer explores the risk for farm workers.
The EPA began an overhaul of the 40-year-old worker protection standard in 2014 and put into place the final changes last year. They include details about how information needs to be displayed for employees and that an applicator should not spray or must stop spraying if a person is in the so-called exclusion zone, in or near the area being sprayed.
Unless you have any other questions, we're going to turn you loose. Thank you for coming.
Kenny Brophy attended an annual training this spring as required to maintain his license as a commercial pesticide applicator in southern Iowa and parts of Missouri. In 34 years of doing this work, he says he's never had an incident that threatened workers. His company pairs an applicator with a scout.
We've got a guy that goes around and checks the fields out first.
Still, he says even having someone complain that his application may have drifted onto garden plants alarms him.
But it makes you feel like, did I really do my job right or not?
Like it or not, pesticides are an integral part of U.S. agriculture. And even with safety measures, worker accidents happen every year. But Harvest Public Media found nobody's keeping track nationally. It's up to workers or their employers to report problems in their state. This cell phone video shows a crop duster flying over a field in Kearney County, Nebraska in 2017. The couple who shot the video were working as detasselers, pulling the tops off seed corn plants in the next field over. This man says he and his wife were working in the field when the plane started spraying without regard for people below. He says they smell poison. The woman says her throat hurts. This couple and another worker who was also in the field that July day reported the incident months later, and the EPA launched an investigation. The EPA has recognized shortcomings in record keeping about incidents like this one. As recently as this spring, the agency committed to being more aggressive in collecting and evaluating data on accidents and compliance with the updated worker protection standard.
This video is not meant to alarm you, but to make you aware of practices that should be observed to maintain a safe work environment.
Field workers are expected to watch videos like this one before starting work each season. Betsy Buffington is a pesticide safety educator at Iowa State University.
It's a training that is required of workers, the people who work around pesticides but not really with pesticides.
Buffington says the burden is on employers to provide the training.
If you hire somebody seasonally, they come in, they may not know to not enter as a pesticide application is taking place. And so it's basically just a basic protection against them.
For the Nebraska incident, the workers had signed an attendance sheet for the required training, which included this.
If you see a pesticide being sprayed that is drifting into your work area, or you are contacted by spray drift, leave the area immediately.
But the Nebraska workers who took the cell phone video didn't leave the field after seeing the plane. They kept working, even though some other workers sat on the bus the rest of the day. Seed companies and pesticide applicators say they're trying to overcome the challenge of coordinating between fieldwork and chemical applications. Shannon Bohm is a site lead for Bayer Crop Science in Huxley, Iowa.
Our production facilities they contact all of the co-ops, they contact the airports every day and say this is where we're going to be. And so we do go through some of those measures, but we're trying to be proactive, but we also need to prepare for the worst.
Because just one unexpected company applying pesticides on a given day could threaten worker safety.
They don't really have to check in with anybody to be in the area. So that's the problem. Where would we even go to let them know?
And that's a question even the revised worker protection standard doesn't answer. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Tomorrow we'll have the conclusion of the Harvest Public Media report on agricultural chemicals. Dakota Date Book is next.
Prairie Public is proud to present the live storytelling event, The Moth, November 14th at the Fargo Theater. Tickets available now at Tickets 300 or online at jadepresents.com.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming along with our members and other sources here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 15th. The Sears Roebuck catalog has been described as a mirror of our times, recording for future historians today's desires, habits, customs, and mode of living. In 1888, Richard Sears sold watches and jewelry. When he sent out his first printed mailer, it was the start of something that would grow to the size of a large book. Its arrival in American mailboxes was eagerly anticipated. It was said that some Americans thought the catalog was second only to the Bible as the book people most wanted in the home. Westward expansion meant that Americans were stretched across the country, many of them far from cities and towns. The Sears catalog meant access for everyone to consumer goods. The catalog had expanded from watches and jewelry to include sewing machines, sporting goods, saddles, firearms, bicycles, and baby carriages. Eventually, a customer could even purchase a kit for a house. But not everyone held Sears in such high esteem. On this date in 1913, the Hope Pioneer published a letter about the Sears Roebuck catalog that arrived like Poe's Raven, uninvited and unsolicited. The author noted that Sears earned $7 million in 1912. That was impressive by the standards of the day. But the writer said it came at the expense of underpaid employees, most of them women. According to the letter, these women and girls lived on starvation wages. If they complained, they were told to use their evening hours to get a second job. The chairman of the Senate Committee on White Slavery noted that some girls worked 10 hours a day to earn $1.50 a week. This meant their annual income was $78. By way of comparison, clothing makers made $699 per year. One economist wrote, 25 years ago, one could live in the United States as comfortably on $500 a year as he can now on $1,200. By either standard, the girls working at Sears fell far behind. Some states passed minimum wage laws in 1912, but a federal minimum wage wouldn't come until 1933. It continues to be a topic of discussion today. Some states have passed a minimum wage that is higher than the federal. And there's much talk about a $15 minimum wage, which surely would have astounded the girls at Sears in 1912. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Meryl Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Women in Sudan helped end the repressive rule of a dictator. Some of them say they still have work to do.
We're fighting two regimes. We're fighting male dominance and we're fighting the regime.
And a rehab clinic in Indonesia helps addicts fight the shame of relapsing.
It gives that feelings of I'm being a failure. You should be like, I still need more help.
Stories from around the world on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thursday on Main Street, 10 states have legalized recreational cannabis, even though the federal government still outlaws marijuana. In the final part of a series about pesticide use, Harvest Public Media's Esther Honig reports that with no federal rules, states are left to come up with their own pesticide regulations for cannabis. Sue Balcom will join us for Main Street Eats. That's always fun on our Thursday show. And we'll share our What's Happening calendar of events. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Thursday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.